Welcome to the Microdosing for Healing podcast. I'm your host, Casey Garrett, and together we'll be discovering and learning from inspiring voices of healers, medicine keepers, and visionaries. Every episode, we'll explore the world of health, vibrant wellness, and natural medicine for a new era of human society. Welcome to today's episode. All right. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. I'm really excited to be back with another trio episode this week with the lovely Tiffany Hurd, Juliana Goldstone, and Rachel Kogan are here with me today. So all of you have been expressing to me how much you have been loving hearing from different microdosing coaches all around the world, because you really get to see firsthand how different we're all so unique and we all hold the medicine so uniquely. And I really, really appreciate how much you've been loving picking up different nuances, different reflections from each of our guests. So you're in for a treat today, these three women. I'm really looking forward. I followed all of their work and really look forward to sharing more of their voices with you today. So we'll start off with Tiffany Hurd. Welcome, Tiffany. Tiffany is a microdosing and plant medicine mentor, speaker, and psychedelic consultant based in the San Diego area, United States, teaching the use of psychedelics within an intentional framework as a supportive and expansive offering for humanity's healing, personal growth, and wellness. Her expertise is mentoring people through customized guided microdosing experiences, teaching coaches, mentors how to facilitate the work within their existing businesses, and educating people on how to receive the fullness of what this medicine can open up for each of you. So good to have you, Tiffany.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the introduction. Thanks for having us. Really excited to be here.
Thank you. I'd love to start off with each of you to hear your personal story. What brought you? How did you discover microdosing? And what has its meaning been for you?
Yeah, so I think just sharing, kind of going back to the beginning, I think is a good place to start. And so just sharing a little bit of my upbringing, I think is really kind of paved the way for how I got here and how I'm now serving this work. And so, yeah, I think a place that I'd love to start is just kind of sharing that, you know, as a child, I grew up in a really unstable, broken home. We were homeless at times. We were living in shelters. We didn't really know what was next. And so at a very young age, I had to take responsibility. And as I became older, I started to realize how much my natural way of being and my natural state was really in this survival experience. And so I found basketball at a really young age. This became a really huge outlet for me. And then fast forward a little bit, I was living with another family at the time, and I ended up receiving a Division I full ride scholarship to go play basketball back east at Providence College. After I graduated, I moved to Chicago, where I started a very unplanned career in the medical field, where I spent about 15 years in high executive positions, you know, serving pharmaceutical medication, which is the opposite of what I talk about now. But I really did what every kind of corporate person wants to do is I climbed the corporate ladder, made a lot of money and kind of just carried on. And so while I did that, I share this because I really realized the state that I was living in was very anxious. I was stressed all the time. I was living with a lot of depression, and a lot of this was stemming from this career of just nonstop going. And so within that, I ended up getting prescribed Lexapro and Adderall for, you know, over 7 years. And I knew that I didn't need this medication. I just didn't go into the deeper layers and started to go into the processing of what was really stemming from it and what was the childhood trauma and how this is deeply impacting my life. And so with all of that, I started to go to therapy. I've always been, you know, naturally driven. I was very into the personal development world. And while all of these modalities were so healing and they were so supportive at that time, I can sense that I wasn't really reaching the deeper layers. And that's where I started to really hear about psychedelics. And you know, over 7 years ago, there wasn't the research and the data and just the amount of incredible information and, you know, guides and teachers that there are today. And so I was just poking around and doing research, and I was hearing about microdosing and kind of hearing that that was a good place to start, you know, to kind of get into the psychedelic world. And so I honestly just put myself on a microdosing regimen. And I was like, you know what, I really want to utilize this medicine to see if I can taper off these medications. And I paired it with modalities and just healthier habits and healthier ways of just kind of doing my day-to-day routines. And within 3 months, I was completely off both of those medications through microdosing. And that's what really opened up this huge space for me of, wow, there's really something here. And so I was just really intrigued and I kept going deeper. I started working with psychedelics and with different medicines, different settings, and wanted to transition into another career. And it all just started to align for me where I dove really deep into it. I started seeing clients part-time while keeping the corporate job and slowly just kind of started making my way more into the space full-time, which is what I'm doing now. And it's amazing.
Thank you so, so much. I think, yeah, from a lot of guys I hear, like, I was my own guinea pig. Yeah.
Yeah, when we all kind of started. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Juliana is a certified somatic sex educator, radical body worker, and Theo mama and medicine guide. She works at the intersection of psychedelics, parenting, and sexuality. The name of her practice is Boldly Embodied, and she believes that both psychedelics and sexuality can offer portals into how to live fully and boldly embodied in our relationship to self and others. She's passionate about creating ethical bridges between the psychedelic and sexuality spaces as a form of harm reduction. She offers private coaching and carefully curated programs for individuals, couples, and groups. Thank you so much for being with us today, Juliana.
Thank you so much for having us. It's so wonderful to be here with the three of you.
Beautiful. Take us back. How did you discover microdosing?
Yeah, it's so funny. I was sitting with this question and I was like, when did microdosing become a thing in my mind? And I was sort of starting to kind of go back, like, when did I become aware of microdosing as a practice, even as a word, and then as a practice? And I think it came actually quite later on, maybe even, you know, recently. I'll kind of go back, you know, my sort of entry into psychedelics was kind of by accident in some ways. So I became a mother quite young, and I was living in Peru at the time. And so the experience of being pregnant and getting ready for birth, living in Peru, actually had a lot of kind of parallel imagery and sort of language that is also used around the ayahuasca experience and the expanded state of consciousness experience. And so while I was there, I actually had the privilege of beginning to study midwifery through the sort of lens of, okay, birth is about to be an expanded state of consciousness, as opposed to how it may have been talked about here, which was, you know, birth is about to be a medical emergency to be managed. So that sort of opened my eyes and my body into this idea of even expanded states of consciousness at all. You know, living in Peru, I was very, my husband at the time was Peruvian, so we lived in Cusco, and I was always very aware of the ayahuasca world and the, you know, San Pedro world and just kind of the deep cultural meaning of these plants there. This was back in 2005. So I don't think it was not even really in the Western consciousness yet. Fast forward, relationships change. One baby is born, another baby is born. I'm back in the United States. And I start to work with psilocybin in an intentional way. And, you know, something about becoming a parent, it's this paradox, right? Because it's like, okay, something about becoming a mother just fast tracked me onto, like, I better get myself together here. Like, it's when all the trauma starts coming up. It's when all the, like, wow, if I really want to, like, what's being asked of me to show up right now is, you know, a couple steps ahead of what I actually have the capacity to do. And so it's this paradox of, right, you're, as a mother, you're called into something so big. And also at the same time, you have no time or energy or resources to, like, actually give attention and energy to the work that needs to be done. So I was working with psilocybin, my partner at the time, he grew the medicine. And so I had access to the medicine, and we were kind of, you know, would switch back and forth. Like, he'd watch the babies and I'd do a journey. And then maybe a couple of weeks later or months later, I'd watch the babies and he'd do a journey. And so it was kind of this, and it was always this big experience, right, that needed a lot of integration. And so I feel like microdosing for me just kind of was almost like this survival move on my part of like, how do I, you know, integrate working with these medicines that I see are helping me so much to understand myself and grow as a mother, like now, like yesterday, and without needing to take all the time away, you know, and all of the sort of preparation time and integration time needed to kind of leave the kids and, you know, go away and come back. So it was something that I was kind of doing just intuitively. And it's a way that I worked with plant medicines, you know, when living in Peru with ayahuasca and huachuma as well. There was many times and many days where, you know, we'd take a little bit and go and take a walk. And so this way of working with medicine was always very intuitive to me. And so I started working with psilocybin in these sort of little, you know, little a day here, a day there, kind of coming up with my own intuitive practice and seeing how much it was resourcing me as a mother. And it wasn't until years later, I think I sort of was talking to somebody about how I was using mushrooms and she said, oh, like microdosing? And I was like, what? I'd never heard that word before. And so yeah, I'm catching up, right? I'm catching up to the time, catching up to myself, catching up to the times. And so I guess that's, you know, a little snippet of my story of how I've gotten here.
That's beautiful. I love it. I have a colleague for years who've been saying to each other, like, I don't know if we're so far ahead that we're behind or we're so far behind we're actually ahead. It's hard to know, especially in this space. Beautiful. Thank you so much. Rachel Kogan comes to us from Ottawa, Canada. She considers herself to be a multidimensional being whose intent lies in sharing the beauty and gifts that Mother Nature has to offer, be it in the form of the four elements who guide her in her daily life or the earth medicines which she holds dear. The two most influential medicines for her being the master teachers cacao and mushrooms. Rachel began her healing career as a fitness and nutrition coach, however, is now interested in educating others in more holistic and earth-based medicines and modalities. Rachel runs a microdosing company, Maya Luna, with her partner Jay in Canada. And Maya Luna has become so much more than simply providing customers with mushrooms. It has now blossomed into an education and event-based experiential company. Welcome, Rachel. So, so good to have you.
Thank you so much, Casey.
Rachel, can you take us back to your beginning with microdosing and mushroom medicine?
Yeah, thank you so much. So much like Tiffany, my journey started way, way back. I grew up in a very religious, strictly religious household, which caused a lot of anxiety and shame and led me down a path of wanting to escape that sort of mentality. And probably I would call it now like a searching or a seeking for something different and something comforting. And I've been no stranger to psychedelics my whole life. I started probably, I was acquainted with psychedelics like LSD, probably I was 16 years old and I'm 46 now. So quite some time ago, and I was into the underground rave scene back then. So very much into MDMA and LSD at that time. And that felt like home. The blissful states and the expanded states were really, really just something I felt really comfortable with. And still to this day, like it's just something I'm really, really comfortable exploring. But being in those environments at such a young age really led me down a path of hanging out in bars later and going to after hours and getting into more and more trouble with drugs and alcohol. And then it created like it was feeding on itself. So the more I would use substances, the more I would feel, you know, that hangover effect. And then I would need to compensate by using stronger drugs or more alcohol. And then it would get worse and worse. And this went on for a long time. I finally quit using hard drugs and alcohol at the time when I got pregnant. And that was sort of like Juliana said, like becoming a mom is like, it's life changing. It's a trip onto itself. And really sends you down a journey of discovery of yourself. And so I feel so, so blessed to have been gifted with pregnancy at that time. So my kids are 17 and almost 15 now. So, but obviously I do use psychedelics now, and I'm more of an intentional user, I would say, than I was when I was 16 and 25 even. It's much, much different as a mature woman. And I want to share a story too about, so I did use alcohol, as much of us do or have done throughout our lives. It's a very accepted substance for people to be engaging in gatherings and community. So in October of 2020, so we were partway into the pandemic, my partner Jay and I decided that we were done with alcohol. And we weren't, I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic by any stretch, but we all sort of know that feeling, like, okay, I'm done. I don't feel good anymore doing this. So October 2020, that was the last time I had a sip of alcohol. And it wasn't until, I believe it was April 2021, so I'd say about 5 or so months after quitting alcohol, that I began microdosing. I don't know how it came into my life. It was just sort of placed in my lap. I heard it. I heard about it on a podcast or something, and I just heard this term microdosing. And I went online, found a company on the internet, and just ordered myself some microdoses. And intuitively just started taking them one day on, one day off, without really knowing. This was a few years ago. I didn't have the education I have now. And a few months after I started microdosing, I got this message from the mushrooms. And anyone who's taken mushrooms knows that sometimes you just get this knowing in your body. And the mushrooms told me that they went back in time for me to October, and they helped me quit. So this was before I even started the microdosing intentionally for healing or anything, but they were like, we went back there for you. We helped you quit so that your life would have a clear slate, a clean slate, so that moving forward, you're going to be on this very important path. And we wanted to guide you that way without any interference. So I just, like, I love telling that story, because when people come to me for microdoses, like, just even their thought about taking that mushroom is enough for that communion with the medicine to begin. So yeah, I guess I'll leave it there for now. So
100%. Absolutely. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. Tiffany, I'm so curious to ask you, I get this question a lot, and I'm sure you do too, given your background. So people who work in corporate jobs, you know, and have to have their game together all the time, and they're running a team. And I get a lot of people who are like, I can't be weird, like, ever. I can't be trippy. I can't be off my game. I can't, like, regret a decision that I made when I was not myself. And so I'm so curious, when you get this, like, how do you hold the medicine? How do you share with them that it's actually the opposite of what you would expect, right?
Totally. Yeah, totally. And one, I just want to point out, I love both your shares and your stories. It's just really beautiful to witness. So thank you for sharing. And to answer your question, so I say, just be weird. Just, you want to be weird, but that doesn't always work out, you know, in the best way. So I think it's really common to feel that. And I think it's common to have that response. And so I think I just want to first acknowledge that and kind of point that out, that especially in a corporate career where everything is very structured and everything, you have to almost show up a certain way and everything has to be so buttoned up, where, you know, you start to bring psychedelic conversations into the room and there is a lot of hesitancy. And I don't think it's just the corporate world. I think it's just, you know, as a society, as a collective, with just the history of what we all know about with psychedelics and war on drugs and everything, and the stigmas that we're just continuing to break down today. And so an angle that I think is really good to take from this place, and usually the angle that I will take, is almost inviting them into learning more about, like, the science of it. I find that helps, like, a very just basic breakdown of how is it that psychedelics are actually supporting you? And in that same conversation, also shedding light on just the amazing research and the data and the really credible institutions that are providing the research and the data. And that seems to, especially from a corporate point of view, when you start to bring in like credible resources and those types of conversations, I find that it softens things a little bit, and it does open up a different curiosity to want to learn more. And so, yeah, I can share like a little bit of the science of kind of that conversation that I would have, or we can just leave it more broad and more open from here. Casey, whatever you think.
No, I welcome that, because I think so many people who aren't scientifically oriented or don't have, you know, bring all the research to that, I think having that ability to speak to that audience is really, really helpful. So yeah, what is the specific research that you have felt really meaningful to that audience?
Yeah. So what I find is usually I'll share like three main benefits that kind of summarizes the data and the research today. And so the first that I would share is what's actually happening when you're working with psilocybin specifically. That's the main medicine that I'll share and teach people about. And so when you're working with psilocybin, it's increasing our brain's neuroplasticity. It's rewiring your brain. It's creating new neural pathways. And so really what this means is it's our brain's ability to reorganize and form new neural connections. And so this is what really allows our brain's natural neurobiological response to start to become less resistant to making specific changes that might feel currently unavailable or out of reach. We might be repeating the same cycles and the same thought loop patterns, and maybe we want to create healthier habits, things along those lines. This is where I find that microdosing and just psilocybin in general can really make a difference for a lot of people. And that can spill over into everyday life. That can be really honed in specifically with things within your work, within how you show up at work, how you connect with people, what your perception is about your current position. If you're really unfulfilled and unhappy and there's certain things that, you know, you want to improve on or you want to do differently, this is a beautiful opportunity to start kind of changing that same perspective and allowing you to maybe have a new one. And that can bring in a lot of just more fulfillment. Another thing that I would share is it's decreasing our brain's fear response. And so, which is directly connected to the amygdala part of our brain. This is really where our behavioral and our psychological responses are coming from. And so what this means is that when the busy thoughts or the very active thoughts, or maybe the negative thoughts as an example, are very active and loud, when the amygdala starts to decrease, this actually allows for a slowing down and a more turning inward approach. And this is where you can start to really get in touch with your emotions. You can start to get more present in your body. And I find that from this place, people will start to respond differently than from a state of high stress or from a state of very reactionary. You know, going back to the corporate example, it is very high stress at times, depending on, you know, the industry that you're in within corporate. And usually it's very fast paced and it's very reactionary. And so if you can start to almost feel like you have more of that grounded control and how you actually want to respond, I find that creates a much more healthier internal environment for yourself. And then obviously for others. And then I would say lastly within that is psilocybin's known for bringing unprocessed emotions or suppressed emotions to the surface. And so I find that this is a very valuable, productive space to process from if you understand how to effectively process your emotions, so that you can essentially start getting to the root of, you know, why you're showing up certain ways or why you're repeating certain cycles or certain patterns and you want to do things differently. That's connected to something, and it's usually connected to something emotionally. And then such as even what Rachel shared, it comes from childhood. And so if you can really start to go into just the root of where some of those things are coming from, that's where you can start to really experience a lot of the benefits that this medicine can offer you.
Thank you so much. Super rich. You just reminded me, I work with many executive clients, and one particular is very senior in government. And I had a session with him the other day. I've been working with him almost a year now. And he's like, I am better in every way. Why is everyone not doing this? I kind of don't want them to.
Can I get that in a statement?
But it's true. It's true. And I find that even, yeah, the most skeptical people within a few weeks, they're like, yes, not only am I not off my game at all, I am more on my game than I have ever been. So thank you. Juliana, I'm so excited to ask you about your deep, deep passion. I follow you and I know you're super passionate about women's health in particular and the intersection between mushroom practice and supporting women's health. So I'd love for you to dive into, from all of the many, many women you have worked with, kind of what are the things that really pop out to you around women's health and healing specifically?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. So in the modality of pelvic care that I am really steeped in right now that I work in, we look at the body as a whole organism, and the body includes the emotional body, the spiritual body. And so one of the components that can often come into, you know, for example, chronic pelvic pain or chronic, yeah, sexual issues can be this very deep rooted emotional component. And I find that oftentimes there's an intersection. So, you know, I often struggle to talk about what I do because I feel like I'm like one of these trees with the two trunks. You know, it's like the same tree, but they have two very distinct trunks. And there are places where the branches kind of intertwine and there are places where they don't. And so there are places where my sexuality work really stands alone, you know, very much outside of the psychedelics. And there are places where my psychedelic work stands very much away from, you know, sexuality work. And there are places where they really intersect and support each other beautifully. And the places where I see that happen is, for example, if somebody is just dealing with like deep-seated shame and pain around their sexuality, you know, from a religious upbringing, for example, and it's gotten to the point where it's manifesting as pain in their body, it's manifesting as either painful sex or just complete shutdown with themselves and their own body and their partner. Working with psilocybin can be such a beautiful way to sort of tease apart the emotional and the spiritual knots that might be there and that are manifesting in the physical body. On the other side of things, oftentimes when someone starts, I've noticed when women, I mean, I think anybody, but I especially work mostly with women, when women are working with either small amounts or even large amounts of psilocybin and life force starts to move, there's often this component of like, wow, I can feel myself as a sexual being. I can feel my sexuality move. And there have been many times, you know, in session with me where a woman will be like, is this okay to feel this? Like, is it okay to feel pleasure in my body right now? Is it okay? You know, because we're so taught to keep it down, to keep it, you know, keep it under wraps, to keep it invisible, or to show our sexuality in a very specific way, you know, in a very specific way that, you know, fits into little boxes. And so I find over and over again, women are having these sort of sexual awakenings with psilocybin. And then, you know, that's those awakenings and those curiosities can be really beautifully kind of supported over on this branch, over on this tree trunk, which is the realm of sexuality work and pelvic care. I don't mix the two in my practice for good reasons. When we're doing sort of touch work and pelvic work, it's really important for choice and voice and consent to be really clear. But there is a place where, you know, what comes up when working with psilocybin, particularly around sexuality, can be really beautifully supported in somatic sex ed session or a pelvic care session, and vice versa. A person who has, you know, maybe unearthed some deep sexual trauma that they didn't know was there, because, you know, in this world, sadly, most of us carry some version of sexual trauma. It's a really important part of trauma healing work, and it needs to be addressed and it needs to be talked about in a safe space. If someone is to unearth some deep-seated sexual trauma in their psilocybin journey, they have a space to be able to talk about it. So those are the crossovers that I see. I mean, I've seen women resolve undiagnosable pelvic pain from just being able to sort of unknot the emotional knots that are there working with psilocybin. So I think I hope that answers your question. I think that there's a lot of crossover and I could just keep on going on and on forever about it. But there's, yeah, it's a deep inquiry.
I love it. No, that's beautiful. And I thought of you, if I can hug both of your trees together for a minute. I thought of you in my most recent immersion. This incredible woman had been doing so much work on herself. She had a lot of childhood trauma, sexual abuse history, and she'd been working, you know, really, really working on herself for decades and had come a long way mentally, physically, but she had a lingering hip pain that had no biological source, that no doctor, no MRI could source it. And it just, thing drove her crazy. And about 2-3 weeks into her microdosing process, she was also working with a somatic practitioner simultaneously, which I love. It's one of the best things you can do simultaneously, in my experience, to microdosing practices, somatic practice. And she was in session with her body worker, and she had been experiencing this newfound connection with her body through her psilocybin practice. And in that session with her body worker, she could feel this energy move out of her hip. And she woke up the next day and it was gone. And the next day it was gone. And on our next call, she was like, this is the first time my pain in my hip has been gone in 9 years. And I've seen that happen so, so frequently. So I love that you have a focus on this work because it's incredibly powerful.
Mm. Oh, yeah. What a powerful story. I love to hear that. And I feel like I just want to add the importance of, you know, I think a lot of the research that's being done, which is so good and so important, really focuses on the sort of mind level, right? The psyche, whereas there's also so much that's happening in the body. And I often have this question, like, why is it that psychotherapists are necessarily the sort of the first ones to kind of go into psychedelic therapy? Like, could it be the body workers? Could it be, you know, folks who are sort of holding more of an embodied somatic practice? I'm really curious to see what other modalities are going to kind of come in to some, you know, to, that can be really beautifully supported by psychedelics.
Mm-hmm. Agree. So much. Beautiful. Rachel, I'd love to dive in with you. I know you have a health coaching background in fitness and nutrition. So one of the things that I've noticed happens frequently, especially over time, people start practicing with mushrooms and like 6 months, a year later, they're like, I've stopped drinking and I've lost weight and now I'm working out. And like, does this happen to other people? And so oftentimes it's not the mushrooms that are necessarily causes. The mushrooms are, you are healing yourself and you're suddenly aware of everything you do, and everything you put in your body, the environment, the relationships you maintain. So I'd love to talk about when you're facilitating, coaching people, supporting people in microdosing practice, what are some of the other lifestyle and fitness and nutrition aspects that you kind of weave into practice with them?
Yeah, thank you. And I really want to like sort of pick up on what Juliana was saying about like the body holding so much. And I think I want to like go through this, like we talk a lot about integration and like the after effects of mushrooms or microdosing. What's really been interesting me, and I've been sort of really doing a lot of thinking on it, is like the preparation part of psychedelics and microdosing. I made this post once and it really like made people scratch their heads. I correlated the dieta for ayahuasca and microdosing. And they were like, what? Like those are two totally different, like teeny little like mushroom versus big giant grandmother medicine. And I was like, but let's think about this dieta. We're going into this beautifully big experience where sometimes for weeks we prepare for it. We are cleansing our vessel. We're cleansing like our thoughts, even like the sexual stuff. We are creating this space in reverence to ourselves for what we're about to embark on, and also to the medicine itself. Like, I'm here for you, and let's meet each other in this place. And then when it comes to after, let's say, the ayahuasca ceremony, are you going to go back to smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol and consuming a bunch of sugar and watching porn? Or are you going to take something from that? And was it drinking the medicine? And again, I'll go back to, you did it before you even drank the medicine. And so I like to bring that sort of idea into how I teach people about microdosing. Like, let's also get, you know, some nutrition in place. Let's get our daily sun exposure and sunrise viewing in place. Let's work on sleep, caffeine, and even let's think about cutting out alcohol and just start thinking about all of that stuff before you even start microdosing, because even implementing some of that, and that comes from my health and nutrition coaching in me, is like, let's implement some of that into your life if you can prior to this medicine, because I think it will really meet the medicine part way. One, to help clean your vessel, and also to show you that you are capable. You can do this, you know, and it doesn't have to be huge things. Like, it's very, like, even just morning sunrise, it's small, like little things. And then I think for some people, it does take possibly a macro journey or starting the microdose to even get them there. Some people do really need to start taking the medicine to get them there, and they can't start it. And that's why they're coming to it. But I really just love the idea of preparing for it and preparing your body for it. And then during our microdosing protocol and practice, lots of time in nature for the physical aspects and the spiritual. Walking is something I recommend for anyone, anytime, and anywhere. But walking has such healing powers. I learned a long time ago that when we go for a walk, we're moving forward. And first of all, that's a sign of safety for a human. Secondly, when we're walking, our eyes are scanning the environment in such a rapid way that it is similar to EMDR practice. Mm-hmm. And so if we're in a microdosing practice, and let's say we're on a dose day, but even on non-dose days, going for a walk, and especially in nature and nature bathing, moving forward, scanning your environment as we're processing. I recommend going without headphones or anything and just being in nature. But just that practice of movement and processing is really, really helpful for people, I find. And then all of the other physical benefits of movement as well. So, yeah.
Thank you. That's fascinating. I love, love that. Thank you so much. One of the things I've been noticing in people and applications lately that I love seeing is so many people are coming to practice in, they're like, I want to do a ceremony 6 months from now or 9 months from now. And they're starting to plan and prepare and are very open to all of these lifestyle ways so that they can hold the medicine differently, which is like, yes.
I think that's important. Like, to actually meet it and not to treat it. I mean, I'm part of a few Facebook or in some Facebook groups that deal with microdosing. I do it partly for research purposes and partly just to see what people are asking and to sometimes respond to them with my own advice or whatever. And I just find a lot of that Western medical model is where people are, especially for beginners. They're just like, I want to take, give me what I can take and I want to feel better. And I don't feel like there's much conversation about the rest of it. Like we are a whole being that does need some other care than just taking a medicine. It does require some work on our part as well.
Mm-hmm. Perfectly ties into my next question for Tiffany. So, Tiffany, you provide so many beautiful educational resources on your platform. I so appreciate. And to Rachel's point, part of the issue with the mainstream is that the focus is so narrow, you know, in this medicalized model, and it's apples for apples, you know, one pharmaceutical drug swapped out for mushrooms. So along those lines, what are some of the biggest misconceptions out there around microdosing? And also, what are some of the benefits that aren't getting talked about?
Mm-hmm. Such a good question. Yeah, I feel like this does really segue off Rachel's share, because, you know, as I was just thinking about some of the bigger misconceptions, what was coming to mind is people will look to microdosing, like, I'm going to microdose and I'm going to heal XYZ. Microdosing, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Something that you'll hear often just kind of in like the psychedelic space is it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Whether it's microdosing or just working with psychedelics in general, it's such an individualized experience. We all have such different experiences and outcomes. And I would say the second reason why I find that it's a misconception is because, you know, microdosing it's not going to do the work for you. Like I said, it's not a magic pill. And there seems to be a stigma that we're continuing to break down as a society, because as you were just sharing, like, we really are accustomed to that pharmaceutical approach where we can just take this pill and it's going to fix, quote unquote, our problems. But as we're finding, it's simply just kind of putting a Band-Aid over the symptom. Whereas I find with microdosing, and this is kind of segueing into the benefits piece, is, and people might not find this to be a benefit in the beginning, but it is a benefit, is it's offering you the opposite experience, where rather than kind of putting that Band-Aid over the symptom approach where you're almost baselining your emotions, you're actually having the opportunity to get in touch with your emotions and to begin accessing and kind of what I was sharing before, is starting to get to the root symptom of what you might be experiencing. And so I share this with a lot of people that I'll work with, because, you know, the approach that we're almost conditioned into is to, you know, I'm going to take this pill and I'm going to find these outward results, so to speak. And there's like this physical proof, this physical sensation that this is working. Whereas I find with microdosing that it's the opposite, because it's such an inward approach. And a lot of us might not be aware or experienced or open to what that feeling actually feels like internally, what it actually feels like to emotionally get in touch with those areas and to make those shifts and changes within. And so it's almost like this awkward approach at first, until you can really understand how to work with this medicine and start to really process and navigate that experience. So yeah, I think with all of that, that's where I really find that you can experience a lot of the benefits. And the main benefits, like I said, I've kind of touched on this a few points already, but it's I find in that emotional piece, I know we've spoken a lot about the embodiment aspect of it, getting out of the mind neurologically, all the data, all the research, and getting into the body of what are we emotionally moving and sensing and changing, and how can we start to really come into a new relationship with our emotions. Essentially, you know, that's where I find that it lives within the body. So yeah, that's kind of the approach that I would take with that.
I love that. You remind me, I had a woman in a group one time, we were doing the check-in and she's like, this feels like big honesty, this medicine. I was like, yeah. Beautifully said. Absolutely. It is. Thank you. Juliana, one of the most profound things that I have witnessed in this work is watching women re-harness all of their energy that was always their own, that because of childhood circumstances and abuse, their energy went to survive sometimes, or went to push against or react to or protect themselves. And when they come into safety in their body, they get to reharness all of that energy, and their sexuality lights back up and their creativity comes online, and they finally have this deep well of energy, feminine energy, that they did not have because so much of it was going outward. And they kind of reclaim all of that. So can you talk a little bit about what you have seen? Have you seen that, first of all? I have a feeling you have. And how can you prepare women for that experience because there's nothing else like it in Western medicine, right?
Oh, what a good question. Yeah. How can we prepare for what it might feel like when all of our energy comes back to us, when we get to fully feel ourselves? Like, can we actually prepare for that? It's a good question, because it's a big feeling. And so in my course, Microdosing Earth Medicine, that I teach, like, the actual microdosing is such a small fraction of what's actually going on in the practice. And we've kind of already talked about this, but, you know, a lot of the other practices that I offer, or that we offer, so this course that I've created together with my dear beloved collaborator, Bina Byrne, who's also been on this podcast, is about, like, just creating spaces and containers in our lives to be able to hold this medicine when it moves, to be able to hold the energy, to practice, like, okay, what happens if we engage in some breath work and raise our energy just to feel ourselves a little bit more in a different way? What happens if we, you know, take on the practice of a daily body scan to even understand, like, what is energy? Where is my energy in my body? Do I even know what's going in and what's going out? So I think that there's a way in which we can kind of just practice, like, what it feels like when our own energy starts to move. And then in terms of your question, you know, it's like a homecoming. Like, I feel like I have witnessed so many women just have this experience of, like, it's a completely familiar, unfamiliar feeling. You know, it's like, I finally feel myself in this way that I never have. And somehow I know what that is already. So yeah, I encourage women to celebrate it. I encourage women to, like, pump the brakes a little bit. Also, there can sometimes be this almost manic experience where the energy starts to move and people are like, what do I do with it all? You know, it's like, well, play and celebrate. And also, like, you know, pace yourself. This is a lifetime of a practice if you would like it to be. So that's kind of what I would say about that. I think that when we as women have access to our power and to our sexuality and to our pleasure, I mean, so much more is possible for ourselves, for our families, for the world. I mean, part of my work with women and with mothers specifically is to kind of heal this, you know, Madonna whore complex where, like, to be a good mother, you have to be divorced from your sexuality. You have to be divorced from your desire. You have to be divorced from your inspiration, your creativity. Many of us, the model of what we saw as the good mother was, you know, the martyr who has no desire or personality of her own, who lives to serve others. And so I think that there's a lot of healing as well, specifically with the mothers that I work with, of, like, weaving these pieces of self back together and what it means to be, you know, a sexually vibrant woman and a good mother and all of these things. There's a lot of, like, ooh, fitting those pieces together. Is this possible, that I see women do? Yeah.
Thank you. So beautifully said. And what you just spoke to, I think I find myself often reminding women, you know, this practice is a nature practice. So nature always wants to find a balance. Nature always wants to evolve. And so sometimes women feel overwhelmed with big emotion, or a lot of women, especially women I worked with who are kind of over 60 in their 70s, they're like, I just can't shut up. I am just talking. Like, I just talking and talking. And it's like, well, how many decades did you not talk? And they're like, oh, yeah, 60, right? And so sometimes I notice, especially when people are new to microdosing, sometimes they overcorrect, like nature overcorrects, kind of like a big rain after a drought, right? And so those big emotions will pass. You will even out. You will find a balance and a new equilibrium, but some it just might be bigger at first.
Right? Yeah.
Rachel. Sourcing. I would love to talk about sourcing. So Rachel, her company is my sourcing collaborator in Canada for our Canadian students. I'm so grateful. And people who work with me know I'm constantly sourcing, knowing your source, knowing your cultivator is super, super important to me, especially now. You know, 3-4 years ago, you know, it was harder to find. Now it's endless. You know, if you are on social media, it's endless options. So I really encourage people to personally know your source if possible. Step into the space, meet people you trust with integrity. And I really feel like the source of the medicine is imprinted upon the medicine. So Rachel, can you talk to us a little bit about Maya Luna and your approach with growing and sourcing?
Right. So Maya Luna was born not long after actually I started my microdosing practice myself. The name Maya Luna even. So Maya has many, many definitions if you look it up. Many meanings. And Maya we took from the Sanskrit word illusion. And so it's sort of like the illusion of the ego on this like earth planet. It's the 3D reality. It's the default mode network. It's very much Maya is sort of this ego driven sort of feel. And then Luna, obviously the moon, the cosmos, the moon is something that guides us through the darkness. She doesn't have her own light, but she reflects. And so I love the idea of as above, so below, and that it meets us right here, meets us in our heart. And so Maya Luna is this beautiful play on like just meeting in this beautiful spot within us. And so that's where the medicine really, really resides. And so it's been a beautiful and hard and interesting and frustrating and yeah, just this birthing of this company out of nothing, really. I'd been microdosing a few months, maybe. And then I learned that there were shops opening up across Canada. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I happened to mention it to someone I know in the mushroom cultivating business. And I mentioned it to him and he said, you should set up your own microdosing company and just get on with it. And I was like, well, I felt that the benefit of the microdose like in such a strong way. And I just thought, I wonder if I could do that. And I didn't want to be cliche, like, oh, it's helped me so much. And now I'm this sort of like shaman, like that's just that shaman complex. And I was concerned about that, but I trusted the medicine enough. And the medicine really, as we know with microdosing, creativity, it went through the roof. We started this company from the ground up. We did all the design work and all the website work and all of the, you know, field research, we'll call it. And everything was done by hand and with love and with really great intention. And we really wanted to keep the integrity with the medicine and to not let it get to, it was us serving it, but it was the medicine doing its work and its mycelial networks here and there. And it's really just grown into this, it's almost like my third child. I really, really love watching it grow and evolve. And like we mentioned in the beginning, it started out as a product line, started out with a microdose product, the Mind Buzz. And then it moved into a few other fun products that are a little bit stronger than microdoses, but still really beautifully like thought out. So now we are, like we said, like more of an experience. We attend a lot of events. We are invited to house parties to set up like pop-up shops, music festivals, yoga festivals, and really getting to know our customers. And really, I love, love, love teaching people one-on-one, like in person, because then you get like the questions that they have like right off the top. It's not like, yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun to meet the people. And then it's been really organic that way to meet people at these really big events and then some of these really small events. So yeah, like I said, we started everything sort of in-house and made everything by hand and measured perfectly. And we got to the point where like our business got too busy for us. We also have other jobs that we do. And so we decided it would be important for us so that we could attend these weekend events or festivals and to not spend entire weekends preparing capsules for people, that we would outsource some of the product. Some of it we still grow and make in-house that are a little bit less popular with our customers. So we're able to facilitate that. But for our larger demand, we have outsourced and really beautiful company that does everything organically for us and that we know and that we trust. And again, keeping with that integrity and knowing that every time we're handling our medicine and shipping it out to someone that it has that love and that intention put into it, at least from us. And I think people really feel it when they become a customer or when they have like a consultation call with me, which I do. Yeah. So I think people really feel it. And that feels really nice to know that shines through.
Thank you. I know that's close to all of the hearts of us here. Yeah, especially right now. I mean, so many people ask me, you know, I really want to get into this work. What kind of background should I have or should I attain? And I was like, this work, you're going to bring every cell of yourself, of your experience and beyond to the way you hold medicine. It all counts. So I really do believe like each and every part of you is part of the experience of the medicine for the people we're supporting. So thank you so much. And again, this perfectly lines up my next question for Tiffany, which is, you know, where we are now is vastly different than 4, 5, 10 years ago, right? And there's certain aspects of the field, I think from each of our vantage point that we're like, oh, right? And so I'd love to hear from each of you kind of, maybe there's something that needs to be said that's not being said enough. It could be a misconception or the speed with which things are happening. I'd love to just hear from each of you kind of from where we are now. Any cautions or things that are kind of weighing heavy on your heart right now? We'll start with you, Tiffany.
Yeah, such a good question. Yeah, I'm just kind of being with it. You know, I think just how mainstream psychedelics have become at this point. Like, obviously, they've been around for thousands and thousands of years. That's a whole other podcast. Where we are today in this day and age, and the research and the data, and the amount of companies in the drug development space, and then psychedelic companies, and just there's so much that's just happening with all of this. Naturally, there's more people that are working with psychedelics or wanting to work with psychedelics, such as, you know, everything we're speaking about today. And, you know, the part that I think is weighing heavy on my heart, on my mind within that is the increase of those that are working with psychedelics. I don't think that there are enough credible mentors and guides and people, whether it's a mentor or a guide or a coach or even a therapist, like obviously because legalities come into play with a lot of this work. But I know there's a lot of us that are underground that are, you know, obviously supporting people in the ways that we can. But I do believe that there get to be more people that really step forward and answer the call and say yes and lean in and educate yourself and inform yourself and really just choose to serve this path if that's what's, you know, calling to you. Is get in the room, get in the space. There's so much excitement happening in the psychedelic world. I can't even say it's an industry. I don't even know it's a psychedelic field, the space, an industry. It's just a movement is really what comes to mind, where, you know, there's a lot of people that can really receive support and how to actually work with these medicines. And I think that's such a valuable part that's weighing on me a little bit here is there's such a beautiful opportunity for just collective healing and this to get into the hands of really influential leaders and can really make a difference in just humanity and everything that's happening today. And I find that, you know, with the intentional use and the effective use and just understanding how to actually receive what these medicines can really bring to us through the support of, especially if you're new to this work, through the support of someone just teaching you and guiding you and kind of holding your hand through the process and also helping you support with just the processing that comes with working with these medicines is something that I think could be so valuable in just, you know, the present moment and just where we're heading, because this is just like the tiny tip of the iceberg. We're like barely like peeling the layer of what's happening within this space and everything that's to come.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. Thank you.
Yeah.
Juliana, how about you?
Yeah, this is a hefty question. And, you know, I think I'm going to kind of riff a little bit off of what Tiffany said, is that there is, yeah, there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of desire. There's a lot of curiosity piqued of like, ooh, what would it be like to hold this medicine? And what would it be like to help people here? And, you know, as an intimacy worker, you know, I've worked in the realm of intimacy for decades now. What I keep on coming down to is like, this is intimate work. And we are in our Western culture, we're not particularly comfortable with intimacy. We don't really know how to like, even make sustained eye contact and like be like know how to regulate our own nervous systems in the presence of another, you know, person's nervous system. We don't necessarily know how to hold like safe but present intimacy in many ways. And it's reflected in, you know, the many boundary crosses and trespasses that we're hearing about in the psychedelic space all the time, where people just don't know how to comport themselves. And so I think what weighs heavy on me is just like the deep responsibility that is required for Western people, you know, not coming out of a lineage particularly that knows how to hold this kind of intimacy, and what it means to kind of guide people into working in this deep way within the context of a culture that doesn't have community around it also. So I think, you know, each one of us is kind of building and creating our communities, you know, of people that people can drop into and can, you know, feel at home within as they do this work. But I think that there's a, yeah, I get inquiries from excited and potential guides, you know, all the time. And it's beautiful. And I'm excited. And there's actually, you know, I'll just drop a little like plug for something that Bina and I are working on in this regard, you know, in the next couple of months, because there's such a demand for guides to be supported. And I love it. And like you just said, Casey, like it's going to take everything that you have, you know, and it's going to take big work to kind of, yeah, harvest and bring forth your own medicine. And so I think that, yeah, that would be what's in my heart right now, is just like the gravity of what it is to kind of step into like guiding people in the current times that we're in, and just to like have our eyes wide open about that, you know, and all the grief and the excitement and, you know, that comes along with that.
Thank you so much. We also just wanted to affirm what you mentioned earlier in the conversation about body workers and massage therapists. And I often get massage therapists saying, should I go get a counseling degree or should I go become a therapist? And I'm like, you are so prepared to hold space for people with medicine work, just with the skills you're already bringing in. And they're like, well, what do you mean? And I said, this work is deep intimacy, you know, and that's what they thrive at. Many of them, they hold presence, they hold sacred space, they move energy. And most of all, they're like completely comfortable being completely quiet and love it for 8 hours at a time. Like who else can do that but massage therapists and body workers? So I do, it's one of the things I love seeing more somatic practitioners being drawn into this space, because I think they're so uniquely equipped to be beautiful guides and space holders. So thank you for mentioning that earlier. Rachel, how about you? What's making you a little?
So, yeah, I sat with this a little bit. And the first thing that came to mind is, here in Canada, we have We do have some access to medicalized psychedelic therapy for end-of-life patients or terminally ill patients, but we have quicker access to medically assisted suicide. And that's really, really sad to see that the government is putting more effort into people ending their life quicker than they are to offering them a service that could really bring some beauty into their last days, weeks, months, years of life. And I find really sad. And also, we're in such a death phobic culture. Like Juliana was saying, like there are in Peru, there's other cultures that experience life and death so much different than we do here. We're so afraid of discomfort that we have to turn to, or we choose to turn to psychedelics at the end of life because we're so uncomfortable with what's about to happen. And while I support, and I would actually love to be a part of that in some way to help people at end of life with psychedelics, I think that would be a really beautiful service to offer to people. Yeah, that's where I am with that one.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Let's stay with you, Rach, for I love to ask in closing of all of my guests to suspend reality completely. And how would you love to see psychedelics or mushroom practice specifically being woven into society in the years ahead? And again, suspend reality as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of hard to put on my complete fantasy hat, but I think in sort of touching on what I just sort of spoke about is to have more access for people who wish to use it, even like to have mushrooms growing on the counter, like people have cilantro or basil growing, you know, in their little kitchen garden, to have access to psychedelic medicine or different fungi that are medicinal, and that be accessed by the entire family. So young children, even grandparents, and everyone in between. And I just think that, but I also think that there's some people who aren't going to use psychedelics, and that some of us are going to hold that, I don't want to say much, like a shaman or a priestess or something would hold something for a community. Because I think we're already doing that. Like all of us here are sort of in that space where we're holding it for now. But I think, yeah, access for families to just have it as part of their life and part of their education. So if you're going to school and you take your mushroom supplement with your smoothie or something, yeah, I think just access for people who want it would be really, really nice. And then for the awakening process of the planet that we're experiencing right now, I think like we touched on with breath work and different sort of biohacking things that we're all sort of like weaving into life already. I think that is kind of coming. I think it's coming. Yeah.
Thank you. Beautiful. Juliana, how about you?
This is such a beautiful question, Casey. I really appreciate this, just the opportunity to like dream into the future. And, you know, I feel very similarly to what Rachel just shared, like access for families and access for like the continuum of life. I think as human beings, we have these beautiful opportunities to like really experience deep expanded states, you know, at birth, when we are born, when we give birth, and when we die. And I do feel like there is an opportunity to practice these things, to practice these experiences with psychedelics that, yeah, we often get to the end of our lives or we get to these big rite of passage moments like birth or death, and we're so unprepared. And I think it's really, it's very sad. And so I would love to see, you know, that just psychedelics woven more into the fabric of life and what it is to be human. I mean, we have these receptors that are perfectly, you know, matched to these plants. Like, it's not a coincidence. The other thing, you know, I'd love to see, I'm a mother of teenagers. And so there's this real interesting walk of, you know, how to educate them. And, you know, it's very taboo. I'm sure Rachel can relate. It's a very taboo thing to be someone who talks about drugs and psychedelics to teenagers, and how to sort of, you know, they're doing their own thing anyway, but how to be supportive and open and allow them to be curious. So I would love to see there be more, you know, maybe that'll be the next frontier, like to have there be more access and more education and more support for teens who are really suffering and are really needing another option. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you. Lovely. Tiffany, how about you?
So amazing. As you were speaking, Juliana, I was like, not that I'm a big fan of school systems. I have a feeling maybe all of us are not, but they're here and they're probably here to stay. So I was almost sensing, like, imagine if, you know, this was being taught to the school systems, and like just psychedelics were being taught as like an education curriculum. Like, that would be pretty insane. And who knows what that would do. But yeah, so that kind of came into the dream world as you were speaking. And then, you know, given just my background in the medical field, I, you know, in a perfect world, I'm almost envisioning microdosing being the SSRI, complete replacement. Like, I talk about this a lot, but, and we're seeing it start to go into that space just, you know, through the guided work that we're doing with people. But for it to actually be a model, for it to actually be in the pharmacy, like something along those lines, where you're not actually receiving an orange bottle with a white cap that, you know, has Lexapro in it, but you're receiving this beautiful glass jar that has this beautiful healing medicine in it for you to receive that. You know, I find like that would just be, that'd be incredible. Yeah. Something else that comes to mind with all that is, it still kind of segues into my background of, you know, just how much we're seeing. And I do a lot of like consulting work in the psychedelic space and with some pharmaceutical companies, where I see this a lot, where, you know, there's these CEOs of psychedelic companies where they actually have not even worked with psychedelics. And it blows my mind that they're trying to pair their company with, you know, a drug development company to bring a product to market and take it through clinical trials and go through the whole process. And I find that it's kind of insane to me. And so with all that, I would love to see just a place where all of these leaders are actually working with these medicines, and the ways that they're segueing and bringing these drugs to market, which I'm not a huge advocate for, like synthesizing the medicine. Of course, that takes a lot of, there's a whole other energy that comes in that component. But I do see a space where there is more of accessibility for people, and more people may actually be more served in a clinical therapeutic setting than not. And that may work for a lot of people. And so I am an advocate for that in a lot of ways, but I do really hope that, you know, it could come to a place where they're actually effectively working with these medicines and making them better leaders, and having that just segue and impact into having more influence on how that really supports humanity and more compassion and more equality. And I can go on and on and on. But yeah, that's what comes into the dream state.
I love it. I love it. And I just want to take a sec to appreciate all three of you for the beautiful and unique way you are bringing this work forth in your own unique way. You know, it's one of the powerful things I love about sharing other voices, is because all of these different access points are important. I do think exactly what you just said, Tiffany, like some people will be very served in a clinical setting with a psychologist with a degree who's knowledgeable about the research, but also someone will be served in ceremony, you know, in a teepee, being served medicine by a medicine woman, right? And I think it's really important that we hold out all of these different, and we normalize all of these different ways to hold the medicine. Yeah, thank you all so, so much. Can you share with our listeners how to find you, your website, and also too, if you have anything coming up late spring or summer? Tiffany, do you want to start?
Sure, I can start. Yes, thanks. So you can find me. I'm present on Instagram, and I have my website. So my Instagram is at I am Tiffany Hurd, and then my website, tiffanyhurd.com. In the spring, I'm trying to think, I'm going to be launching a global microdosing membership. It's actually in the works right now. And so my sole intention is to really make the guidance and the support of how people can learn how to microdose more accessible. Not everybody can really have the access of working in, you know, a coaching container in a group setting, and or simply some people just don't really vibe with that style. And so I really wanted to create a membership where it can just reach more people and more people can have that accessibility. So that will probably be done by the time that this launches. So that's really exciting. And yeah, I would love for you to learn more and I can share more about it.
Love it. Thank you. Juliana, how about you?
Yeah, thank you so much. So you can find me on Instagram at Boldly Embodied. And then my website is boldlyembodied.com. And something I'm really excited to share about, I have a cohort, a microdosing cohort for mothers that launches on Mother's Day, actually. So May 12th. And this is going to be a 3.5 give or take month cohort just for mothers. And we're going to follow my microdosing earth medicine curriculum together. So 3 months of practice and protocol and just really deep support. So we'll meet weekly on Zoom. Another component of this thing that I'm really excited is that we're actually going to have an in-person day up at Rootstock Retreat, Bina Burns' lovely place. So anyone who's, you know, local to this area or wants to take a trip and come be, you know, in community, microdose together, you know, be in a supportive group of mothers, that will also be part of it. So I'm excited for that one. Thanks.
Beautiful. Rachel, how about you?
I just want to say thank you, Casey. This has been really, really an amazing conversation to be a part of. So I can be found at two places. So I'm at iam.rachelinspired and also at mayaluna1111 on Instagram. My website is mayaluna.ca. And I don't have any offerings or anything like that coming up. We're just doing a lot of local markets and festivals this summer. So we're focusing on that. But I do have an offer for your listeners who are in Canada, because we ship within Canada. So we'll offer 20% off to anyone that puts in the code Casey20 into the website. So,
oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Beautiful. Well, thank you all so much. And we'll put all of those links and contacts in the show notes too, so folks can find them. So thank you all so, so much for being together. I really appreciate all of you and everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow these three women and their beautiful work, and we'll see you back in a couple weeks. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Microdosing for Healing podcast. Are you ready to take the next step? Please visit us at microdosingforhealing.com to access our free Microdosing 101 workshop. In it, you'll learn more about our diverse community, our supportive group programs, and discover if earth medicine practice might be right for you. See you in the next episode.